After mimicking me a little, he winks and says, "The outside stuff." And I lost all control of my better judgment, or the part that stops me from making an ass of myself. He flashes that cheeky smile that never fails to make my heart race.
"Forgive me?"
"You're forgiven." I pause. "Forgive me for bitching out on you?"
"You're forgiven."
Tentatively, he stands, inching toward me. He towers over me with his athletic frame.
"So, friends again?"
"Friends." Connor pulls me in for a hug, and it's like I never left his arms. I don't know if I want it to stop. I don't know how he does it. Makes me feel so comfortable with just a hug or a smile.
"Want to ride to campus with me? I've got class in an hour. We can grab some coffee?"
"Sounds good." I sit on his bed as he gets dressed and comes in and out of his bathroom gathering his stuff. "I was wondering something."
"Yeah?"
He stops in the doorway with his toothbrush in his mouth. "Would you want to hang out this weekend? Maybe come shopping with me in Boston?" Connor holds up one finger and disappears. A few seconds later, he returns, wiping his mouth with a washcloth.
"I can't, babe. I've got a semifinal game in Buffalo."
"Oh, shit. Right. I knew that. No biggie. Some other..."
"Take my Jeep."
Connor tosses the washcloth in his laundry hamper. "What?"
"Yeah. Come to my game,"
he says, his eyes lighting up.
"You drive down to Buffalo in my Jeep, and I'll ask Coach for permission to skip out on the bus ride back. We can stay an extra night and go shopping, hang out, whatever."
"Are you sure? I feel like that's a big ask." He aims his crooked smirk at me, pulling out the heavy artillery I see.
"If we win, I want you there to celebrate with us. If we lose, you can get me drunk and help me feel better."
"Oh yeah? I don't know if I'm prepared for the kind of ego stroking that would require." He laughs at the innuendo. It feels good being able to joke around again. All we have to do is pretend that foolish kiss never happened and everything can just go back to the way it was before. That is, if we both ignore the implications of spending a weekend out of town together.
"So it's a plan?"
he asks. "Wouldn't miss it," I say lightly.
"Nice."
He gathers his backpack and we head downstairs to the front hall. Connor opens the door and gestures for me to exit first.
"So, not that I'm not grateful for the invite, but why are we going shopping?"
I wink at him over my shoulder. I'm giving myself a makeover.
14. Connor. The semifinal against Minnesota is a headbanger from the first whistle. Thanks to some trash talking on social media, our team goes into the game Friday night hot and ready to eat those asshats for dinner. We're sticking to our game plan, though. High press, be physical. Minnesota is a technical team, but they won't be able to absorb our pressure for 60 minutes. We won't let them touch the puck without feeling us breathing down their necks. Every pass will let them know we're going to make it hurt. We end scoreless after the first period. Then right out of the gate in the second, Hunter gets the puck on a breakaway and fires it into the net to put us on the board first.
"Attaboy!"
Coach thunders from the bench, smacking his clipboard against the plexi. He calls for a line change, and Hunter and I heave ourselves over the wall and squirt water into our mouths from bottles brandishing the Gatorade logo. The rest of our line settles on the bench, all eyes glued to the ice. The Breyer D-men are struggling to keep Minnesota out of our zone. Coach barking for them to get it together.
"Dude, you need to do that exact same move again," Bucky's saying to Hunter. "Deke that ginger-haired fuck and just book it. He's not fast enough to keep up with you."
Bucky's right. Hunter's the fastest man on the ice tonight. Nobody can stop him. We change on the fly, substituting Alec and Gavin for me and the captain. We hit the ice hard, ready to extend our lead by another goal. But Minnesota must be seeing their life flash before their eyes, because the next time Hunter receives a pass, number 19 for Minnesota slams him into the boards. I see fucking red, watching my team captain hit the ice. And before the whistle even blows, I've got that asshole against the glass.
"Get off me, pretty boy," he growls. "Make me."
We exchange some punches and elbows. At one point, I feel someone wailing on me with jabs to my ribs as both benches clear to take sides in the fight. Ultimately, 19 and I both sit in our respective penalty boxes for the brawl. Fucking worth it. Minnesota ties it up with a wrist shot from one of their forwards just as the second period winds down. We trudge into our locker room feeling the heavy weight of that score, 1-1 bearing down on our shoulders.
Unacceptable!
Coach Jensen rides our D-men the moment the door swings shut.
We let them dominate us those last 3 minutes. Where was our defense, huh? Jerking off in the corner?
Matt, who was the leading scorer among the defense all season, hangs his head in shame.
Sorry, coach. That one's on me. Couldn't intercept that pass.
We got this, coach, Hunter says, steel in his eyes. We'll finish him off in the third.
But everything goes wrong in the third period. Gavin crumples to the ice out of nowhere with a pulled hamstring and has to exit the game. Matt then gets tossed in the sin bin on a major penalty. We manage to kill it, but with the clock winding down, it seems Minnesota is picking us apart. They're catching their second wind while half of us are gassing out. Maintaining the high pressure becomes more difficult, and cracks form in our defense. The offense can't find any openings to force turnovers or breakaway. The game turns into an uphill, brutal battle for us. Our opponent is now faster and more aggressive, and that's when it happens. Minnesota strings together 4 uninterrupted passes and catches all of us a step too slow. Their left winger slaps the puck past our goalie, Boris's glove, to put Minnesota up by a point. It's 1 point too many. We can't claw our way back. The buzzer goes off to signal the end of the third. The end of the game. We've been eliminated. Back in the locker room, it's like a fucking wake. No one says a word or even looks at each other. Gavin, with ice taped to his thigh, launches a trash can across the room, and the resounding crash makes everyone flinch. As a senior, this was his last chance for a championship, and he couldn't even finish the game. No matter what anyone says, he'll be convinced for the rest of his life that he could have made the difference. Same for Matt, who will torture himself with the guilt that taking that penalty cost us the momentum we might have had to tie it up. When Coach Jensen walks in, the room is silent but for the rotating fan whirring in the corner.
This one hurts, he says flatly, rubbing his jaw.
He's sweating nearly as much as the rest of us. Negative emotions pollute the air we're breathing. Anger, frustration, disappointment. And the exhaustion of playing at such a high level for so long is slowly seeping into our bones, causing shoulders to sag and chins to drop.
That's not how we wanted to go out, Coach continues. For the seniors, I wanted to get you guys to the big dance. We just didn't have it tonight. For everyone else, we'd do it all again next year.
Next year. Hunter and I exchange a determined look. As juniors, we have one last shot to leave a legacy at Briar. Gold and glory and all that. Straying from his usual short and not at all sweet style, Coach goes on to say he's encouraged by the way we played tonight. By the progress we've made since the start of the season. I choose to believe better days are ahead, because right now the feeling in this room is miserable. A dream died tonight. And it's only now, I think, that most of us are realizing we were entirely convinced we had this title in the bag. It never occurred to us we wouldn't be playing in the final. Now, we just go home and pretend it doesn't gnaw at our insides. I fucking hate losing.
15. Taylor. Friday night was rough. After Briar's epic loss, the guys hit the minibar hard and then crashed until noon the next day. I'm not entirely sure why Connor wanted me to drive all the way to Buffalo, seeing how I spent the hours after his game having drinks with Brenna Jensen and Summer De Laurentiis, two of Hunter Davenport's roommates, and Demi Davis, Hunter's girlfriend. The four of us had a proper girls' night. We had a great time at the hotel bar, and I won't deny how helpful it was to sit with them during the game, as they were able to explain the rules when something happened that I didn't understand. Although, to be honest, I still couldn't tell you what offsides means or what constitutes icing. Connor getting a timeout for tackling a guy, I figured out on my own. But the rest of the hockey lingo Brenna was throwing out like a pro went right over my head. As I understand it, hockey is basically a bunch of first graders fighting over a little black puck while the referee tries to keep them from killing each other. It's cute. Coach Jensen gave anyone who wanted permission to hang back in Buffalo, a consolation gift of sorts, so several of Connor's teammates paid for an extra night at the hotel. I've got my room till Sunday, on another floor than the Breyer players, thankfully. I ran into Demi in the tiny hotel fitness center this morning, and according to her, the entire fifth floor was hopping from last night's depression binge drinking. She said she and Hunter hadn't gotten a wink of sleep. Despite Connor saying the other day that he was going to need consoling, we barely exchanged 10 words after the game. He was commiserating with his teammates, which I understand. But I'm grateful the girls were around to keep me company. Everyone seems to be in better spirits this morning. In the hotel restaurant, I meet Connor for brunch, along with a few of the others who stayed behind. Where are Brenna and Summer? I slide into the chair next to Connor's and set down the plate of food I just gathered at the buffet. And by food, I mean brown toast and one hard-boiled egg. Yum. And Demi, I add when I notice Hunter is sitting alone.
Brenna's Skyping with her boyfriend.
Bucky supplies.
She's in the room next to mine, and I heard them through the wall.
Perv, Connor says while chewing on a piece of bacon.
Hey, not my fault this hotel has paper-thin walls. Summer dragged Demi on some errand,
Hunter tells me.
No idea where. What's the matter?
Foster grins at me.
You don't like being the only chick at the sausage party?
To punctuate that, he picks up a greasy sausage from his plate and takes a comical chunk out of it with his teeth. I burst out laughing. There is so much subliminal shit going on with what you just did, I can't even begin to unpack it. Across the table, Hunter raises his coffee cup and takes a quick sip.
So what are we doing today? T and I are hitting a mall.
Connor answers in that lazy drawl of his.
Sweet. Can I come?
Bucky pipes up.
I need socks. Already lost all the ones my mom got me for Christmas. I'm in too,
says Hunter.
My girlfriend abandoned me, and I'm bored.
I slowly chew and swallow a piece of toast. Feeling awkward, I glance at Connor, then his teammates. This isn't exactly a group activity sort of thing. Hunter lifts a brow.
The mall isn't a suitable group activity? They're going to buy sex toys,
Foster announces.
Guarantee it.
We're not buying sex toys, I sputter, then turn redder than a beet when I notice every head at the neighboring table swivel my way. I glower at Foster. You're the worst.
Or am I the best?
He counters.
No, you're the worst,
Hunter confirms, grinning. If you must know, I need some new clothes, I reveal with a sigh. Connor's going to help me pick some out.
What? And we can't tag along and help too?
Demands Bucky. I can't tell if the wounded look on his face is for real.
You saying we have no style? Oh, I got style,
Hunter declares, crossing his arms over his chest. Foster dons the same macho posture.
I've got so much style, you don't even know.
You're right, I don't. I say dryly, shooting a pointed look at Foster's t-shirt, which appears to feature a cartoon image of a wolf riding a dragon over a sea of fire. Whether it's dragon fire is undetermined. Foster polishes off the rest of his sausage.
All right, crew, let's do this shit.
And that's how I end up at the mall, a couple of miles from the hotel, with four towering, imposing men standing outside my dressing room at Bloomingdale's, throwing clothes at me like it's a timed collegiate event. I barely wiggle out of one pair of designer distressed skinny jeans before an avalanche of shirts and dresses come cascading over the door. "I think we're reaching the singularity here, guys," I call out in dismay.
"Change faster,"
Connor shouts through the door.
"Foster just found a whole wall full of sequins,"
Hunter adds like a threat. "I don't think I have much need in my wardrobe for..." Another tidal wave of dresses falls to the floor. "That's it. We need to lay some ground rules." I step out of the dressing room in a long-sleeved plaid shirt that cinches under my boobs and flares at the waist, and a coordinating pair of dark wash skinny jeans. It's not a bad look, managing to hide the parts I'd rather not share without looking like I hopped out of a bed wearing my duvet. Connor pops an eyebrow at me. Hunter and Bucky give polite golf claps. The three of them are standing there in full, albeit ill-fitting, tuxedos. I gawk at them, too stunned to even laugh. "What? Why the hell are you wearing tuxedos?"
"Why not?"
is Bucky's response. And this time, I can't stop the gales of laughter that pour out. Jeez, how did these clowns even have time to change clothes while burying me in fabric?
"You're getting that outfit,"
Connor tells me, and there's all sorts of intention behind his eyes. It's downright indecent the way he drags his gaze over my body, with an audience, no less. And yet, under his scrutiny, I don't feel self-conscious the way I do with others. When Connor is with me, he puts my nerves at ease. "Yeah, I like this one," I admit. Then I frown. "With that said, I'm up to my knees in here, you maniacs. Let's try to restrict it to two outfits each, shall we?"
"Aw, come on. We haven't even discussed evening wear,"
Bucky pouts.
"Or scarves. How many scarves do you think you'll need?"
Hunter asks.
"Is statement jewelry something we should be looking at?"
Foster weaves his way to the front of the group with two armfuls of cocktail dresses.
"What's your cup size?"
Connor smacks Bucky on the back of the head.
"You don't get to ask my girlfriend her cup size, dickhead."
My heart does a little flip. That's the first time he's said the G word since our fight. I wasn't sure we were still doing this, so hearing it does confusing things to my head. "Here." I gather up the piles at my feet and push them at the boys. Restriction measures are in place. I close the door to someone muttering fascist under his breath. After we've done all the damage Bloomingdale's can handle, we move on through the mall, Connor carrying my two shopping bags. It's interesting to see the difference in styles each of the guys picks out. Connor seems to know me the best, or at least our tastes fit most closely together, as he picks the more casual options. Very California. Hunter tends toward an edgier look with a lot of black. Bucky has some sort of preppy fetish that I quickly steer clear from, and I'm not sure Foster understands the assignment. What I do learn, however, is that hardly any of them agree on which looks were their favorites. Not at all what I expected in terms of engineering their ideal version of a Taylor Barbie. At one point, Connor's teammates drag us into the toy store where they challenge a couple of middle schoolers to a lightsaber fight before getting us kicked out for scaring customers with it masks. After lunch at the food court, the guys have exhausted their enthusiasm for the mall and head out to find new trouble, leaving Connor and me alone for the first time all day. Our first stop is a surf and skate shop. Seems only fair that I get to play dress up with him too, so with a dozen board shorts, I shove him into a dressing room.
"What's your plan for summer?"
he asks through the door. "Back to my mom's house in Cambridge. She only has one seminar for summer semester, so we're thinking about taking a trip somewhere. Maybe Europe? You going home to California?"
"For a little while, at least."
There's a heavy sigh in the dressing room.
"This is the farthest I've ever lived from the water. I used to go to the beach and surf just about every day. I've tried to get out to the coast a few times since I transferred to Briar, but it isn't the same."
Connor steps out in the first selection of board shorts. It takes every ounce of willpower not to throw myself at him. He stands there, shirtless, leaning against the door of his dressing room and looking absolutely edible. The deep ravine of muscle that disappears into his waistband is doing things to me. It isn't fair. "Not bad," I say flippantly.
"Orange isn't my color."
Agree. Next. He goes back inside, tossing the discarded trunks to me as he changes.
You should come.
Where? To California?
Yeah. Come out for a long weekend or something. We can do tourist shit and hang out at the beach. Just chill.
Teach me how to surf? I tease. He emerges in another pair of shorts. I've stopped caring about the colors and patterns of the fabric and given in to blatantly gawking at his leanly muscular physique and the way his abs clench when he talks. Would it be inappropriate to lick him?
You'd love it,
he tells me.
Man, I wish I could go back and get stoked on my first wave all over again. It's the best feeling in the world. Lining up for a wave, feeling it rise beneath your board. When you get to your feet and you're both connected, you and the power of the ocean, it's symbiosis. It's freedom, baby. Perfect alignment of energy.
You're in love. He laughs at himself with a boyish grin.
My first love.
Again, he steps back into the dressing room stall.
Last summer, I spent a month with some volunteers canvassing the coast from San Diego to San Francisco.
I wrinkle my forehead. Doing what?
Cleaning up the beaches and sweeping the near shore waters for trash. It was one of the best months of my life. We hauled hundreds of pounds of garbage out of the ocean and off the sand every day. Then we'd surf all night and hang out around a bonfire. Felt like we were accomplishing something.
You're passionate about this, I say, admiring this side of him. It's the first time he's talked about his interests outside of hockey and surfing. Is that something you want to do after college?
What do you mean?
He comes out in another suit. Well, you could make a career out of this. There are probably dozens of environmental nonprofits working on the West Coast on ocean cleanup efforts. I cock an eyebrow. It might not be too late to change majors from finance to nonprofit administration and still graduate on time.
I'm sure my stepdad would love that.
Why does it matter? A tired expression washes over Connor. Not just his face, but all of him. He slouches, hunching his shoulders like the weight of the topic is wearing on him.
Max pays for everything,
he admits.
My education, hockey, rent, all of it. Without him, my mom and I would barely have 2 cents to rub together. So when he suggested I major in finance like he did, Mom considered the matter settled, and that was it.
Okay, I get that he holds the purse strings, but it's your life. At some point, you have to advocate for what you want. No one else will.
It felt, I don't know, ungrateful to argue with him. Like I'd be an asshole to take his money and tell him to fuck off.
Yeah, using the words fuck off might be a bit harsh, but a frank conversation about how you want to spend the rest of your life isn't out of line.
But the thing is, we don't talk. I know he loves my mom and he's good to her, but with me, I think he still sees a punk from LA who isn't worth his time.
And why would he think that? I ask quietly.
I got into some bad stuff as a kid. I was dumb and did whatever my friends were doing, which was usually getting high, shoplifting, breaking into abandoned buildings, whatever.
Connor looks at me with guilt, shame even.
I was a little shit back then.
It's clear in his expression he's afraid I'll view him differently. But none of this changes who he is now. Well, it seems to me you're not a little shit anymore, so I hope your stepdad doesn't think you're still like that. And I'm really sorry if he does. Connor shrugs, and I get the sense there's more to the story than he's willing to share. His relationship with his stepfather is obviously a real source of insecurities and frustrations.
You know what would cheer me up?
He says suddenly. A mischievous twinkle lights in his eyes, sparking my suspicion. What? He walks past me to pull a skimpy black swimsuit off the returns rack near his dressing room.
Put this on.
No way. It won't fit me, I warn.
I'll get naked if it'll make you feel better.
How would that make me feel better? He shrugs again, offering a devilish smirk this time.
Always seems to work on other girls.
Rolling my eyes, I take the suit from his outstretched hand and duck to the next stall. I would never, ever dream of doing this for any other guy, but I know making a joke of it and doing a little runway turn for Connor will take away the dark cloud threatening to settle over his mood. So to salvage the rest of our day, I strip out of my leggings and sweater and put on the damn one piece. It's low cut on my hips with a deep V in front and crisscrossed straps in the back. As predicted, it's too small. My ass cheeks are barely contained and my tits are trying to scale the walls like an attacking Mongolian horde. Nevertheless, I take a deep breath and step out of the dressing room. Connor is waiting out there for me, still clad only in a pair of board shorts, his long blonde hair swept back from his face. His mouth falls open in shock. "Here, don't say I never gave you anything," I tell him. So fast I can't hold in the yelp that escapes me, Connor lurches forward and rushes us back into the stall, locking the door. "What the hell are—" His mouth is on mine before I can finish. Hungry, predatory. Big palms curl around my hips and I'm pressed against the mirror. His tongue parts my lips and all trepidation evaporates as my fingers tangle in his hair. I'm overwhelmed with him. Skin against skin, so very little separating us. His body is warm and firm against mine.
"Fuck, Taylor,"
he whispers breathlessly.
"Now do you understand how hot you are?"
He's hard against my stomach. I feel every inch of him, long and stiff, and it puts ideas in my head. Dangerous ideas. I want to slide my hand under his waistband and grip his hot, heavy erection. I want to feel his tongue in my mouth while I stroke him until he's moaning my name and thrusting his hips and... A loud knock startles us. We break away and I hurry to pull on my clothes over the swimsuit before Connor opens the door to the frowning saleswoman standing in the hall. Without an ounce of shame, my fake boyfriend scratches his bare chest and says,
"Sorry, ma'am. My girlfriend needed an opinion."
I choke down a wave of giggles. "Sorry," I manage to say. "Hmph," she huffs, then stands there and waits while Connor disappears to put on his clothes. With his trademark grin, he hands her the board shorts while I yank the tag from the swimsuit. Avoiding his amused gaze, I address the sales associate. "I'd like to buy this bathing suit, please," I say primly. We're both practically in hysterics at the register as I pay for the indecent swimsuit beneath my clothes. Then we bolt from the store like we stole something, laughing all the way back to his Jeep. After the heat and hunger I felt in that dressing room, this bit of levity is much needed. Levity, good. Hunger, bad. Yep, hungering for Connor Edwards is very, very bad. Because he's exactly the kind of man who will break my heart, even if he doesn't mean to.
16. Connor. Hunter's holding up a shot glass at the bar, leading us in what I'm sure is a moving speech about the tough loss in the semifinals last night, and wishing the seniors well while the rest of us look to better days next year. Unfortunately, I can't hear a damn thing over the music in this club. The bass is rattling the ice in the discarded glass beside me. The floor vibrating beneath my feet is sending a tickle all the way up to my balls. When Hunter stops talking, we all down our shots and chase the sting with a beer. Man, I'm going to miss these assholes. Foster bumps my arm and says something to me. But I still can't hear a word, so I gesture to my ear and shake my head. He leans in to shout, "Where's your woman?" Good question. When Taylor and I returned to the hotel earlier, I got a text from Summer in all caps, demanding to know why she hadn't been invited on the shopping trip. I reminded her that she and Demi had skipped out on brunch to run errands, to which she informed me that my conspiracy to keep her away from malls ends today. Have I mentioned that Summer is a crazy person? A follow-up text quickly reappeared, demanding that I leave Taylor in Summer's fashionista hands to prepare for our night at the club. I think Taylor felt bad that the girls might have felt excluded, so she agreed to do the whole girl thing with them and meet me here later. Not gonna lie, I was worried about leaving her with those chicks. Taylor's done great at adapting to the guys. Hunter's roommates, on the other hand, are a fucking handful. It was with some misgivings and a warning to call me if they tried making her cut her hair that I left her in Summer, Brenna, and Demi's clutches. Now we've been at the club an hour already, and I'm starting to wonder if I should organize a search party. This place is slammed wall to wall. Even some of the Minnesota players showed up, along with another team from New York City. When I spot number 19 at the bar, he offers to buy me a shot, and I accept because my pride never gets in the way of free booze. While we're mostly relegated to communicating with hand signals and nods, I think we managed to squash the beef. Until next season, anyway. Eventually, our teams merge around the end of the bar and take turns jabbing each other and shouting war stories over the DJ's set list. As much as we want to hate them, the Minnesota guys seem cool, though I'll feel a lot better if we're the ones buying their pity drinks next year. As I'm checking over my shoulder toward the entrance for the 50th time looking for Taylor, a face catches my eye. Just for a second, but then he's gone. Hell, I'm not even sure I saw him at all among the strobing lights and pulsing bodies. Despite the knot in my stomach, the sudden bolt of adrenaline, I assure myself that my eyes were just playing tricks on me. "Jesus!" exclaims number 19, whose name I couldn't hear when he tried to shout it over the music. Foster follows his gaze and releases a sharp wolf whistle. "Holy fuck! Con, you seeing this?" My brow furrows. I turn around but can't figure out what they're gawking at until two blonde heads catch my attention in a sweeping beam of light. Summer and Taylor are making their way through the crowd. They're tailed by Brenna and Demi, but everyone whose name isn't Taylor ceases to exist for me. I think I dropped my glass. Was I even holding one? Everyone else filters into the darkness until it's just Taylor, walking toward me in a tiny white dress, glowing under the UV lights. Her hair curled, makeup done. That sexy beauty mark above her mouth that makes her look like a modern Marilyn Monroe. That's my girlfriend. I must look like a total jackass striding over to her while trying to hide a hard-on, but fuck me, she looks stunning. "Dance with me," I say at her ear, wrapping an arm around her waist. In response, she bites her lip and nods. Just that little thing makes my dick twitch, and I'm not sure how we're getting out of here without me ripping her dress off. "You're welcome," I hear Summers say, but I ignore her, single-mindedly pulling Taylor toward the throng of dancers. "I suck at dancing," Taylor tells me as I gather her into my arms. "Don't care," I mutter. "I just want to touch her, hold her. I know she can feel my erection as her body melts against me. I want to ask her what she wants to do about it, but I'm not that fucking drunk yet, so I hold my tongue. "Just don't let me look stupid," she says, finding it easier to speak in my ear now that she's wearing heels. "Never." I place a kiss on her neck, feel her skin erupt in goosebumps in response. Then she turns to face away from me, presses her ass against me while she dances, and I bite down so hard on the inside of my cheek I taste blood. "You're killing me," I groan, slowly sliding my hands down her body, savoring every sexy curve. Taylor looks over her shoulder and winks. "You started it." Someone suddenly taps me on the shoulder, a dark-haired guy I make out from the corner of my eye. I assume he's asking to cut in, and I'm prepared to tell him to fuck off when that knot in my gut returns. "Hey, con," a voice from the past drawls. "Fancy meeting you here." My stomach drops. A wave of queasiness washes over me. I shutter my eyes and paste a complete expressionless mask on my face. "Kai," I say coolly. What are you doing here? He does the same gesture I've been doing all night, signaling he can't hear me. Let's go talk over there, he says, pointing somewhere past my shoulders. I'm sorry about this, I mumble in Taylor's ear.
Sorry about what?
She looks uneasy, gripping my hand tightly as we follow Kai to the smaller bar at the back of the club. I still can't believe he's here. Goddamn Kai Turner, still scrawny and stinking of weed. I haven't seen him since I moved clear across the country to get away from what we did. The fact that he's tracked me down all the way to some random joint in Buffalo tells me nothing good will come of this reunion. I've got Taylor's hand in mine, holding on for dear life. Half because I'm afraid she might take off on me. Half because I'm not sure what I'll do to this kid if we're left alone. The hell are you doing here, Kai? I demand. He smirks. I know that look too well. It worked better when we were teenagers. Now it reads like the guy trying to sell you gold-plated watches out of a backpack. Good to see you too, brother. He slaps me on the shoulder. Ain't this a fucking coincidence? I shrug his hand off me. Bullshit. There are no coincidences or happy accidents where Kai is concerned. Since we were in middle school, he's always had an angle. Back then, so did I. How'd you find me? His leering eyes slide to Taylor, who shrinks at my side. Everything about the way he looks at her makes me want to lay him out. All right, you got me. I'm living in the Big Apple now. Some of my boys are playing in the tournament, and I thought I might run into you, so I tagged along. Tried hitting you up. Weird, though. His pointed gaze slides back to me. Your number's disconnected. I got a new one. To lose people like him. Taylor grasps my arm, questioning me with her big turquoise eyes. Christ, I want to get her away from him. I'd leave if I didn't think he'd just follow us. And frankly, I can't trust what might be waiting outside the club. I know Hunter and the guys would throw down for me in a heartbeat, but I've got no way to get their attention, which means right now I'm on my own. This your girl? Kai sees my discomfort and focuses in on Taylor just to get under my skin. I can't tell if he wants a fight or if he wants me to ditch her so there isn't a witness. Guess you have gone East Coast. The fuck's that supposed to mean? I ask, fists clenched. At this point, I don't give a damn about getting tossed out of the club. I push Taylor a step behind me to shield her. Nah, nothing, man. I'd hit that ass. And I'm sure she's got a great personality. He flashes a toothy grin. You just used to have standards. Taylor drops my hand. Shit. Fuck you, asshole. Get lost. I give Kai's chest a shove and then try to reach for Taylor again.
I'm gonna go,
she says hastily. Please, just wait for me, T. I'll go with... Ah, come on, baby. I'm just messing with him. Kai shouts after Taylor, but she's already gone. A red haze washes over my field of vision. Listen to me, I growl. I put one hand on Kai's shoulder and force him between the bar and the wall. We're not friends. We aren't anything. Stay the hell away from me. So your fake ass got a little money now and a fancy school, and you forget all about your real friends, huh? You're still a poser, con. I know where you come from, and I know who you are. I'm not messing around, Kai. You come near me again and see what happens. Nah, man. He pushes my hand away and squares up to me. At barely 5'9", he doesn't even reach my shoulders. You and me got history. I know things, remember? Like who helped someone break into your stepdaddy's mansion and trash the place. You don't get to wash your hands of me that easy. I want to fucking hit him. For finding me. For dragging his drama back into my life. For reminding me I'm still just a punk piece of shit, pretending to fit in with the fancy kids we used to make fun of. But I go after Taylor instead.
17. Taylor. I feel like such a jackass. Taking refuge from the throbbing music and pulsating lights down a hallway outside the restrooms, I press myself into a corner and try to take a deep breath. It's too hot in here, too crowded. This place is pulling the air from my lungs. What the hell was I thinking, letting Summer talk me into borrowing this stupid dress? And the hair, the makeup, the silver stilettos. This person isn't real. She isn't me. Sure, it seemed worth it to see the look on Connor's face when he spotted me across the room, but even a good disguise can't hide what I am. A joke. Connor's charity case. He's just too kind to see it.
Fuck, Taylor. I'm sorry.
Speak of the well-meaning devil. My head lifts as Connor shoves past the men stumbling toward the restroom and comes to a stop in front of me. There's real panic in his eyes. Whether it's due to me or whoever that guy was back there, I don't know. And I'm too tired to care. I'm all out of fight. None of this is his fault, but I just can't pretend anymore. I want to go, I tell him frankly. He hangs his head.
Yeah, okay. I'll get us a ride back to the hotel.
It's a quiet trip. With every minute, I feel the gulf between us widening. Feel myself shutting down. My mistake was letting myself believe I didn't care about him and the fact that our silly arrangement was always going to be temporary. I don't know how sticking it to Abigail turned into me following him 6 hours to Buffalo, but it's my fault that I let it happen. My mom didn't raise me on fairy tales, and I was stupid for falling for my own ill-conceived ruse.
I'm sorry,
Connor says again when we reach my hotel room. His expression reflects my own loss for words. He doesn't have to say it. We both know this whole thing blew up in our faces exactly the way it was always meant to.
Can I come in?
I should say no and spare myself the torment of an extended, "It was nice knowing you." I'm weak, though, reluctant to lose the friendship we'd only just repaired, and disappointed that I wasn't brave enough to stand up to Abigail that very first night. If I had been, I would have saved myself the heartache and humiliation now. Yeah, I murmur, unlocking the door. Sure. Inside, I kick off my new heels, grab a $6 bottle of water from the minibar, and start chugging. When I turn around, Connor's on the queen-sized bed, pillows arranged to form a barrier beside him. A smile almost springs free as I remember how I did the same thing the night we met, arranging Rachel's stuffed animal collection on the bed between us.
Will you sit with me?
His tone is rough, lacking its usual laid-back inflection. I nod, only because my feet hurt and I'm too self-conscious standing there on display for him.
You're upset,
he begins,
and I know why.
I stretch out on the other side of the pillow wall, my short dress riding up to reveal way too much thigh. I feel sweaty and tired, and I'm sure my hair is a wild mess of tangled waves. So how is it that Connor still looks fresh as a stupid daisy in a charcoal button-down over a black t-shirt and dark jeans?
That guy back there is a total idiot, and you shouldn't waste a second worrying about the dumb shit that comes out of his mouth,
Connor says.
It wouldn't have mattered who was standing next to me. Trust me. Kai would have found a way to insult them. He picked on you because he knew it would get a rise out of me.
I hear him sigh.
That's not fair to you. It's fucking mean, and I'm sorry it happened. But please don't let this ruin your weekend.
He hit on the one nerve, I find myself whispering.
I know, babe. And if you knew him like I do, you would have stabbed him in the nuts with one of those heels and gone on about your life without a second thought.
Shit. I breathe out a sad laugh. Why didn't I think of that?
Because you have tact.
I give him a sideways look.
Most of the time,
he says with a smirk.
My point is, forget about what that asshole said. You look amazing tonight.
You always say that.
It's always true.
A blush rises to my cheeks. I hate how easy it is for him to do that, to get a physical response out of me. I take one of the pillows from the barrier and hug it to my chest. Who is he to you anyway? A friend from California, I take it? Connor's head falls back against the headboard as he lets out another long sigh. I wait, watching the story play out across his face as if he's deciding how much to tell me.
Kai was my best friend growing up,
he finally reveals.
Back in my old neighborhood. We'd skateboard together, surf, smoke weed, whatever. When my mom got married and we moved to Huntington Beach, I'd still see him now and then, meet up to surf. But it's hard when you're not attending the same school anymore, you know? So we drifted apart. By college, I'd stopped returning his texts, and that was pretty much it.
I don't know Connor well, certainly not well enough to have any read on his relationship with Kai. But I think I've spent enough time with him recently to know when he's holding something back. There's a wound there, something deep. Whatever it is, it's a step too far to let me see it. You're not convinced he tracked you down just to say hi, huh?
Not a chance.
There's an edge to his voice.
I've known Kai most of my life. He's never not been up to something.
So what do you think he's up to? Connor chews on that, his jaw working, the muscles in his neck twitch.
You know what? Not my problem, and I don't want to know.
He rolls onto his side to face me. Something about his vivid gray eyes, the way his lips part when he's staring at mine, does my head in every time.
I was having a great night before we were interrupted.
I can feel myself blushing again. I bite my lip a little too hard just to remind myself of the pain that's always waiting when I let myself pretend. Yet I can't stop myself from saying, me too.
I would have really liked to see where it was headed.
Where do you think it was headed? Oh boy, does that throaty voice actually belong to me? His gaze turns molten.
I've got about 1,000 ideas if you're into it.
Am I into it? Of course I'm into it. I'm way too into it, and that's the tricky part. Because right now is when I make the decision. Go all in on total emotional destruction with Connor, or make a clean break for good. Why does he have to smell so nice? I have to tell you something, I say, squeezing the pillow to my chest and staring at my toes. I'm a coward. I take a deep breath and try again. I've never been with anyone, like, at all. Well, I've done a little, but not much.
Oh,
is his response. It hangs there. That infuriating little syllable, like a wisp of smoke growing larger as it fills the room. Then he drawls,
I was a virgin too, once.
I jab him with an elbow.
It's been a while since I was with a virgin.
Another jab.
I won't tell anyone that you came too fast.
I swing the pillow at his face. This isn't funny, asshole, I say, laughing despite myself. I'm being incredibly vulnerable right now.
Babe.
He throws the pillows to the end of the bed and climbs on top of me, settling between my legs while crouched on his knees. We're not even touching, but the image of him above me, the heat emanating from his muscular body, I've never experienced anything so erotic in my life.
I know I've been a fuckboy in the past, but I don't want to be that guy with you.
How do I know that? I ask honestly.
Because I've never lied to you. I wouldn't. Even though we haven't known each other that long, you see me better than anyone else I know.
I'm startled to hear his deep voice waver.
You do know me, Taylor. Trust that.
He leans in and gently presses his lips to mine. The kiss is soft, unhurried, as if he's savoring this one perfect moment just as I am. When he pulls away, I glimpse the lust and naked need in his eyes, the same churning in mine.
I'll go slow,
he promises,
if you'll let me.
My body wins over my better judgment. I reach for him, pulling him down for another kiss. I feel him hard against my thigh, and my core clenches in response. I know he's as turned on as I am, and yet he stokes the anticipation for longer than I can stand, kissing me deeply, trapping me beneath him by planting his hands on the bed at either side of my head. I wrap my leg around his hip, trying to draw him closer, to urge him toward, I don't even know what, something to ease this ache inside me. Touch me, I whisper against his mouth.
Where do you want me to touch you?
He asks, dragging his lips down my neck. I don't know how to be, I don't know, sexy. So I use my body to tell him what I need. I wrap my other leg around him and arch my hips, pressing myself against his erection. The move elicits a groan from Connor, who buries his head in the crook of my neck and thrusts between my thighs.
When you say you've done a little, what does that mean?
His warm breath tickles my collarbone as he kisses his way down to my cleavage. It means a little. I rock against his thrusting groin, distracted by the flurry of sensations racing through my body.
Anyone ever done this?
He asks, and then tugs at the low scoop neck of my dress to expose a bit more of my breasts. He cups them, his thumbs stroking gently. Yeah, but not this. I pull one spaghetti strap off my shoulder to give him greater access, which exposes my nipples.
Jesus, Taylor.
Connor licks his lips.
I need to taste you.
My hips rise again. Please. He licks one rigid nipple, then draws it deep in his mouth. The resulting shockwave goes straight between my legs. Holy hell, this feels good. His hot mouth explores my breasts, kissing and sucking and nibbling until I'm writhing with the need for more of him, for him to let me off this hook of taut desire. He chuckles at my desperation, his hand traveling down my leg, between my thighs. Then he stops.
How about this?
He rasps.
Can I?
I moan in response, and his fingertips skim my pussy, dancing over my clit. Only one other person has touched me there, not counting my own hand, but Connor's the first man I've let tug on the elastic of my panties and slide them off. I'm practically naked now, top and bottom exposed, with my dress bunched up around my waist. Connor regards me with pure hunger in his eyes.
You're so fucking hot. You have no idea.
I shift in discomfort, managing a hasty laugh. Stop looking at me like that.
Like what?
His tongue sweeps out to lick his bottom lip. Like that. It's making me self-conscious. I try to pull my dress down a little, but he stills my hand, his palm covering my knuckles.
Taylor.
There's an intensity in his eyes that I haven't glimpsed before.
What do you think I see when I look at you?
A chunky girl in a too tight dress? I'm not sure, I lie. But I know you're not seeing one of those skinny chicks you're probably used to with their perfect toned body. I awkwardly place a palm over my half-exposed stomach. See? No abs.
Who needs them? I've got enough abs for the both of us.
I snicker, but the sound dies when he covers my hand again. This time, pushing it away so that his palm is the one on my belly.
You're exactly what I want in a woman,
he says seriously, both hands now exploring my body.
Soft and warm, your thighs, your ass. Fuck these hips.
His fingers curl around said hips, which my incredibly obtuse male GP once described as more than suitable for childbearing.
Your curves kill me, T.
Before I can respond, he grabs my hand and presses it directly onto his crotch. There's no mistaking his arousal.
Feel how hard I am?
He groans softly.
That's all you. You're the stuff of my fantasies.
He's either the greatest actor on the planet, or he means every word he's saying. Either way, my body is responding to his heated gaze and the husky compliments. Cheeks scorching, breasts tingling, pussy aching. If he doesn't start touching me again, I'm liable to self-combust.
So, now, I can keep reassuring you how sexy you are,
Connor says playfully.
Or I can give you an orgasm. Choose wisely.
Anticipation shudders through me. Orgasm, I blurt out. I choose orgasm. He chuckles.
Good call.
I bite my lip when he slips a finger inside me. Not too deep, just a knuckle or two. Just enough to cause my entire body to clench around him. A dirty smile curves his lips. He plays with me until I can't stand it any longer and push against his fingers, silently begging for more. Breathing hard, he slides down my body until he's gazing up at me from between my thighs. Connor runs his hands up my calves, over my knees, his lips grazing my inner thighs. He kisses his way to my pussy, sweeps his tongue over my clit, and I cry out from the bolt of pleasure he generates inside me. I grab fistfuls of the blanket and press my ass into the bed to stop from squirming.
Feel good?
He asks, then resumes his wicked ministrations without waiting for an answer. It's the greatest feeling in the world. His warm, wet mouth exploring my sensitive, aching body. Breathy sounds and low whimpers fill the hotel room, and it takes a while to realize they're coming from me. I'm lost in a haze, completely caught up in the pleasure he's bringing. I rock against his eager mouth, then cry in disappointment when the heat of it disappears.
Fucking hell. Hold on.
He chokes out. I feel the mattress shift, hear what sounds like a zipper. My eyelids flutter open in time to see Connor slipping one hand inside his boxers. Just as it registers that he's stroking himself, his mouth returns to my pussy and short-circuits my brain again. With his tongue and fingers, he coaxes me to the edge again while his free hand works his cock. I want to be the one helping him do that. I want his dick in my mouth. I want to taste him. I want to make him lose control the way he's doing to me. Connor suddenly groans against my pussy, his hips moving quicker. He sucks on my clit, panting hard, breathing out.
I'm coming.
And that's all it takes for the thread of tension inside me to snap. An orgasm. One with a level of intensity I've never experienced shudders through my muscles. Even my toes go numb as I gasp through the pulsating heat that captures my every nerve ending. Connor fucking Edwards.
18. Connor. The Wednesday after our loss in Buffalo, the team holds a meeting at the Breyer Arena. Our season's over. And for some of the seniors, that means shifting their focus to the NHL teams that drafted them and getting in the best shape of their lives for summer training camp. For others, last weekend was likely the final time they'll ever suit up. Today, however, we're here for Coach Jensen. Hunter stands in the center of the ice where we've gathered for a little ceremony of sorts. Coach, sensing something's up, lingers just outside our circle with a suspicious look on his face. It's an expression I've seen Brenna don on more than one occasion. It's almost scary how alike Coach and his bitchy daughter are. So, Hunter starts. We brought you here today pretty much because we wanted to say thank you, Coach. This bunch of degenerates and hooligans wouldn't have made it as far as we did without you. And even though we couldn't bring home the big trophy for you, you made all of us better. Not just better hockey players, but better people. And we all owe you a lot. Like bail money, right, Captain? Bucky pipes up, getting a laugh from the guys. Thanks, Buck. Hunter flips him off. So anyway, thank you from all of us. We got you a little something to show our appreciation. Gavin and Matt all but drag Coach into the center of our circle so Hunter can present him with the custom-engraved Rolex everyone on the team chipped in to buy. Which is to say, our parents did. Mom sent me a blank check with my stepdad's name on it, and I told Hunter to just write in the amount. I'd rather not know. Man, Coach admires the watch, at a loss for words. This is real nice, guys. He sniffs, rubbing his face. If I didn't know better, I'd think he was about to cry. This is a special group. I mean it when I say I've never had a better bunch of guys. Better than the years Garrett Graham and John Logan were on the roster? Foster demands, naming two of Breyer's most famous alumni. Graham and Logan both play for the Bruins these days. Let's not be crazy now, Coach replies, but there's a twinkle in his eyes. You all worked hard for each other, and that's all I can ever ask. So thank you. This is great. Foster brings out a cooler of beers from the bench and passes out bottles while we all take one last chance to appreciate being on this ice together. I have no doubt next year will be a strong team, but it'll never be this one again. 8 months ago, I showed up on this campus with a sudden pang of regret, wondering if I'd made a rash and ill-considered decision to ship my life nearly 3,000 miles across the country to start over. I feared I'd never fit in with the ivy-covered legacies of this place, that I'd choke on the Ralph Lauren polos and inbred poshness of it all. And then I met these idiots. I couldn't have asked for better friends. And Taylor? I've known her less than a month, yet I count her among the short list of people I trust. She makes me want to be a better person. With her, I feel like I can finally get something right. Like maybe I can actually have a real relationship based on friendship rather than lust. Even if some of my friends are having a hard time believing that. All I'm saying is, Foster babbles in the Jeep on the ride home, Khan didn't come back to our room Saturday night, so unless he hopped in bed with you and Demi, Captain, I've got a good idea what he's up to. Dude, jealousy is not a good look on you, I drawl. For real, though, Hunter leans forward from the back seat where he's sitting with Matt. What's up with you two? Hell if I know. I mean, I like Taylor, a lot. And I'm also pretty sure that if I bring up the matter of renegotiating the terms of our relationship, I'll scare her away. I don't think she's convinced yet that I'm reformed. And to be honest, no one is more surprised by my recent turn in favor of monogamy than I am. For the moment, though, I'm enjoying myself. A gentleman doesn't kiss and tell, I respond. Foster snorts. So then what's your excuse? Con, you should make Foster pay rent if he's gonna stay on your dick this much, Hunter says with a grin. I'm starting to have sympathy for the hell we gave Hunter over Demi and the ridiculous celibacy pact he made at the beginning of the semester. This shit's annoying. The guys are like dogs with a bone, and I can only imagine it'll get worse now that the season's over and they've got nothing else to do than hound my ass. So when Hunter corners me when we stop to pick up some lunch at the diner, my newfound sympathy has me being a bit more forthcoming with him. How serious is this? He asks while we wait by the car for Matt and Foster to grab our orders from inside. I don't know if it's serious. Definitely on the way to being not serious, I shrug. We haven't even had sex yet, I confess, because I know Hunter can keep shit to himself. Buffalo was the first time we fooled around. That's sort of the best part, though, isn't it? Before sex? When all you're thinking about is having it for the first time. All the anticipation, you know? Getting each other all messed up over the tension. I wouldn't know from experience. This is the first time sex wasn't the first step for me. Usually it's the first and last. I remember you being kind of crabby, actually. Well, yeah, he laughs. There's that, too. Taylor's a good girl. We get along great. I hesitate for a moment. Honestly, I'm trying to see how long I can go before she realizes I'm a dirtbag and she's too smart for me. Hunter shakes his head. You know, if you didn't treat yourself like a dirtbag, maybe other people wouldn't either. Thanks, Dad. Whatever, dickhead. I hide a smile. Hunter and I have a different relationship than I do with the other guys. Maybe because we're both working on being better people lately. He's the only one I talk to on a more serious level, so when he comes hard with the Mr. Rogers routine, it has a way of getting under my skin. His words are still crawling around in there when I get home and return a call to my mom from this morning.
"Where have you been, mister?" she chides. "I didn't hear from you after the game."
"Yeah, sorry about that. It was a crazy weekend, and I was exhausted by the time we got back. Then I had to play catch-up on assignments for class the past couple days."
"I'm sorry you guys didn't get to play in the championship. But next year, right?"
"Yeah, I'm at peace with it. Guys who get all fucking hung up on shit like that for a whole year get on my nerves. It's like, dude, get another hobby." "How are things there? How's Max?"
Her sigh tickles my ear. "He wants to buy a sailboat. Went out to Monterey to look at one."
"Does he know how to sail?"
"Of course not. But why should that stop him, right?"
She laughs again. I guess it's sort of sweet how she finds his more irrational ideas charming.
I told him, "You're hardly home enough to have dinner. When are you going to learn to sail?" But if he's going to have a midlife crisis, I'd rather it be with a boat than a younger woman.
"You can't go to jail for setting your own boat on fire," I inform her. "I read that somewhere."
"If it comes to that," she agrees, joking. "Anyway, I don't want to take up too much of your time. Miss you. Love you. Stay out of trouble."
"Who, me?"
"Yeah, that's what I thought."
"Love you, Mom. Later." I am glad she's happy. I'm glad Max makes her happy, and she's got all the money she'll ever need to bicker about shit like buying a sailboat. Yet a sour taste forms in the back of my throat when I get off the phone. Talking about Max brings the run-in with Kai back to the front of my mind. It was like whiplash seeing him again, and I haven't felt right since. There's been a nagging ache in my neck that just won't go away. Getting out of California was as much about getting away from Kai as anything else. I used to think I owed him something. For a long time, he was my best friend, and when I made it out of the old neighborhood and he didn't, I felt as if I'd betrayed him somehow. But then I realized it was never about loyalty or friendship for Kai. People are just tools in his eyes. We're only as good as we can do for him. When I look back on it, I recognize that Kai Turner is a rot that infects everything he touches, and I hope to hell I never have to see him again. Feeling a foul mood creeping in, I text Taylor looking for a distraction. Me. Can I come over and go down on you? I'm joking, but only a little.
Taylor. Kappa meeting. See you later.
I don't know if I should feel rejected that she doesn't even acknowledge my offer with so much as a thinking emoji. I decide to cut her some slack, seeing as how she's in the middle of a meeting and didn't have to text me back in the first place. Me. Cool. Text me. I toss the phone on my bed and head to the dresser in search of some gym shorts. Guess I'll go for a run since I can't even get my fake girlfriend to let me eat her pussy. Never too early to start working on my cardio.
19. Taylor. I just about swallow my tongue when I read the text from Connor. That man has a very annoying habit of catching me off guard during Kappa meetings. What's so funny? Sasha rips my phone out of my hand after I send a reply to Connor. I lunge at her, but my best friend is too quick. Former gymnast and all. Bitch. "Can I come over and go down on you?" she reads aloud, jumping to her feet to get away. I chase her to a standoff around the antique coffee table in the huge living room. Everything in this room is some priceless artifact donated by an alumnus for some dumb reason. Eggplant emoji, splash emoji, P